Ladies and gentlemen, be upstanding for Bruce Shapiro. And let's start with Jeffrey Epstein, if you please.
Well, well, this is one of these moments when the politics of, well, when celebrity scandal and politics seem to collide. Jeffrey Epstein, of course, is the billionaire hedge fund guy who was arrested in Manhattan yesterday, accused of being a sexual predator, accused of having coerced coerced sex and trafficked in young women over a period from 2002 to 2005. And, you know, this would be spectacular in and of itself. You got FBI agents at the mansion on the Upper East Side of one of the richest and most prominent men in New York City. But this is also a case that touches a lot of sensitive nerves in both political parties.
Well, let's look at his friendship with Bill Clinton, for example.
Well, indeed. Bill Clinton is a longtime friend of Jeffrey Epstein, as are a number of other Democratic political leaders. Clinton flew on Epstein's plane a number of times. The former president says he knew nothing about the activity indicted here. But the more important set of relationships seem to be, in this case, on the Republican side. First of all, a mild embarrassment for Donald Trump, who's gone out of his way in the past to praise Epstein's taste in young, beautiful women. That doesn't look good. But worse than looking good is Trump's cabinet, in particular, his secretary, his labor secretary, James Acosta. Acosta was the U.S. attorney in Florida back in 2008. And back then, the feds had Epstein. He was indicted under very similar charges in the state of Florida. But then Mr. Acosta, the U.S. attorney, supervised a very unusual plea bargain in 2008 in which Epstein agreed to plead guilty to lesser charges, was incarcerated very briefly in a minimum security facility in which he was allowed to go to his office during the day. And he ended up even from there negotiating down his sex offender status. It's a scandal that was uncovered by terrific reporting in the Miami Herald, a reporter named Julie Brown, who went out of her way to track down Epstein's victims, now women in their 30s, who as young girls were trafficked by this guy. This is putting immediately pressure on the Trump White House to
Bruce, why on earth was such a deal ever cut?
Well, we still don't exactly know. You know, the broad picture is that this is the impunity of the well-connected plutocrat, that, you know, Epstein was able to hire, of course, some of the most prominent lawyers in the country, including Alan Dershowitz, the famous civil liberties lawyer in Massachusetts. He was able
a member of the dream team on the O.J. Simpson trial.
Indeed. And he, you know, was able to call in, I think, every political favor that in a lifetime of donating to big causes around the country, he accumulated. That's how it looks. However, I think there may be some other shoes to drop. We now know, because of the federal indictment unsealed yesterday, that there are lots and lots of photos and lots of records at Epstein's house on the Upper East Side. And it seems impossible to imagine that there are not going to be some other individuals, other prominent individuals, who end up getting implicated in what can only be described as a sex trafficking ring. We'll have to see where this one goes, but it is bringing back to life the kind of seamy sexual side of the Trump administration's problems going into the election. It also is reminding people of the impunity that the wealthiest and most powerful residents in society, enjoy. And that, I think, will feed the populist tone of the election in both parties. This one is going to play out for quite a while.
I am infatuated by the United Kingdom's ambassador and the uproar he's caused in embarrassing the president.
Well, it certainly is interesting to see Sir Kim Darroch talking in such an unvarnished way, calling the administration, what is it, inept and clumsy, and saying that the president may end his term in disgrace. You know, this is the unvarnished language of the diplomatic cable. How much effect it has in the long run, who knows? What I find interesting is that this is not the first time in American history that diplomatic cables have the potential, have disrupted American politics. It actually touches a deep, deep nerve, going back to 1795, when secret diplomatic cables from the Adams administration to Britain, discussing, or rather to France, discussing tensions between France and Britain, were leaked in probably the first major WikiLeaks-type diplomatic leak in American history. And those leaked cables so embarrassed the Adams administration and caused, very similar kinds of turmoil that Congress responded by passing what at that time were the most draconian anti-press laws in the history of the New Republic, and indeed the most draconian anti-press laws we've ever had. They finally sunsetted during the Thomas Jefferson administration. But, the idea of the frank language of diplomatic cables, which is supposed to be secret, embarrassing an American administration, is something that has a lot of historic resonance. And again, we'll have to see where this goes. A new prime minister will come in, presumably replace Sir Kim Darroch. In the meantime, are the British frozen out of the White House? Trump says so, but who knows what that means.
Okay, we've only got time for one more topic, and I'm going to say the magic words, what me worry?
you often say that we are, the United States is a failed or failing state, and I tend to disagree. But the evidence that you are right is coming with the very sad news that Mad Magazine has ceased publication of new editions and will go out of print entirely. There is no publication in the long history of the First Amendment and in the long history of satire in the United States that has done more to hold all kinds of authority and celebrity and culture up to ridicule and to create a cultural norm of irony. In my childhood, they went after Khrushchev and Nixon and John Wayne and Dirty Harry, this scrappy, primarily Jewish, profoundly irreverent group of cartoonists and writers. The film Mutiny on the Bounty became Mutiny on the Bouncy. Dirty Harry became Dirty Larry. On and on and on. The culture is richer for Mads.
I remember it as being
incredibly
sophisticated. And let me point out to those who were mystified, what me worry was in fact the slogan of the character who usually appeared on the front cover.
Indeed, Alfred E. Newman, who to us with our further levels of irony enrichment bore striking resemblance to George W. Bush. But you know, the slogan "What Me Worry" will, I think, live on after MAD, and it certainly speaks the proper distance to have and the proper attitude to have when too much piety and too much seriousness creep into the public conversation. Vale Mad Magazine.
Totally agree. But of course, we almost always agree, except that on the state of America as a failed state. But that minor detail apart, you've been listening to Bruce Shapiro, of course, the exec director of the Dart Center for Journalism and Trauma at Columbia University.